Well, folks, thank you for joining me. My name is Amy, and you are listening to the 4-H's Show. My co-host, Jerry Procaccini, is away this week, and so she has asked me to come in and cover for her. This is the 4-H Show, which stands for Health, Harmony, Happiness, and Humor, and we're going to have all four of those things here today. Let me please remind you that our sponsors include Super Simple Foods, offering homemade soups and fresh bread daily. You can find Super Simple Foods at the Mad River Car Wash, 124 Flanders Green. I'm sorry, Finders Green, Waitsfield, Wednesday through Saturday from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. And we have another sponsor, Whippletree Designs. They have a Vermont souvenir apparel for all ages. Whippletree Designs is located at Mad River Green Shopping Center in Waitsfield. You can reach Whippletree Designs by calling 802-496-9694 or follow them on Instagram under Whippletree Designs. And of course, let me remind you that the following program presents the views of its participants and producers. It does not necessarily represent the views of WMRW or its license holder, RootsWork. And I am so very, very honored to be here at WMRW 94.5 on your dial. WMRW 94.5 on your dial in East Warren. And you can also find us at WMRW.org. It's the top of the hour. And I am here in the studio. I'm so excited. I have a live guest today. Tom Kelly is in the studio today. And Tom is running for the House of Representatives. He is also an attorney who served in the state's attorney's office. And he is currently running for a House seat for the city of Barrie. And we have a lot to talk about today. And one of the subjects that I particularly invited Tom in today to talk about is Proposition 5 / Article 22, which some people refer to as, you know, a reproductive rights bill. It's a constitutional amendment. And that's one of the things I really would like some clarification around personally, is what that all means, a constitutional amendment, especially one like this. And as we launch into this sensitive subject, talking about reproductive rights and especially things like abortion, I know, having been a health teacher for over 10 years in schools in various towns around Vermont, whenever this subject comes up in class, it's very sensitive. And so I want us to keep in mind that whatever age we are, whatever our backgrounds, whatever our experiences, we have all been exposed to levels of propaganda around this issue. And one of the things this propaganda tricks us into is having such strong negative emotions with a sense of urgency attached to them. And while it's totally appropriate to have strong, you know, and powerful negative emotions from wherever you sit on this issue, if we can take a breath when we feel that sense of urgency coming up, because that sense of urgency combined with negative emotions can really turn off our brains. And we need to be thinking clearly about constitutional amendments and law and rights, and mostly, though, listening with an open heart. And so to keep both parts of our brains working and our hearts working, we need to be able to breathe and remember that we are safe right now. Feel the floor under your feet, feel the chair under your legs, feel the cup in your hand. Take a breath and remember right now in this moment, we have abundant time to talk about this. We have abundant time and heart space to hear each other out. And I've learned a lot over the last, 15, 20 years of talking, particularly with young people, about this subject. And I have learned so much from listening to my students, being very surprised, for example, at how many young men want to have families. You know, that was not something growing up in the 80s that I believed was true, and want to have, marriages and things. And also how talking about abortion can sometimes seem personal to kids whose mothers were poor and unwed, and perhaps their fathers left them, and, I've had children tell me, like, I'm really glad my mother didn't abort me, you know, because she sort of fits, you know, the model of what we'd expect, you know, to think of when we think of abortions. And then to just keep in mind also that many abortions, many abortions are sought by women who are in their 30s and are doing it for financial reasons. They already have children. They simply just cannot afford any more. So this is a financial issue. This is a personal issue. And I couldn't ask for a better guest to have on today than Tom Kelly from Barrie City. Tom, how are you doing? And please tell us about yourself.
I'm fine. Thanks for inviting me. I appreciate WMRW and you, Amy, for inviting me. I appreciate the sponsors, too. And I hope I can, you know, accurately or effectively state my point of view, which I think could be different than what's been said before on this, I hope. And So I am an attorney. I went to Notre Dame Law School, graduated in 1984. So you said you grew up in the 80s. So I guess I'm a little older than you are. I grew up, born in Watertown, New York. We moved to Vermont when I was in sixth grade, and that was to Barrie City. And I went to the local public school and Marion High School, which is no longer there, and then on to Norwich, and then into the Army. And I spent 29 years in the military, the first four or five on active duty. I went to Germany. I met my wife there. She's not German. She was in the military, too. And then I did another year in Kuwait in the 2000s, but the 29 years were mostly reserve duty. Anyway, with National Guard. And then I spent most of my professional career until November of this past year as a prosecutor with that law degree, serving as a deputy state's attorney most of that time. But I was also elected to the position of state's attorney, which is the county prosecutor. There's 14 elected prosecutors in Vermont. I was one of those in Washington County for 8 years. And, yeah, so.
So this is not your first election or your first race?
No, a little different, though. I didn't think of, and I hope it isn't, the state's attorney position a political position in the same sense as running for the House is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but that's, yeah, that's, I did run for a countywide office, and now I'm running for, to represent the city of Barrie in Montpelier at the State House, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and so one thing I was really interested in and why we met actually was around our sort of questioning of the legality, perhaps, of masking people, forcibly, you know, masking people, having mask mandates at work or in the state. Yeah, mm-hmm. So do you want to talk at all about
that?
Oh,
I can, sure. I mean, I was in a position as a deputy state's attorney in Lamoille County, and around September of 2021, the governor, through his administrative secretary, the Secretary of Administration, said that people working in the executive branch for the governor, which I wasn't, by the way, I was working for an elected official myself. He was the state's attorney in at the time, and still is, in Lamoille County. But the governor said those members of the executive branch have to either attest that they've been vaccinated or wear a mask.
Oh, and either or.
And at work, and be tested periodically. And I said, no.
Mm-hmm.
I could not attest that I had been vaccinated, and I would not wear a mask like a leper at work.
Yeah. And
that ended up, November 5th was my last day because I refused.
Right. And so, crisis and opportunity, because now you have Would you be running right now?
If I was still working as a deputy state's attorney, no, I would not be. So, yes, I suppose in part that is one of the reasons I'm running.
Mm-hmm.
As I say on my card, I oppose I'll fight for against government overreach and for individual freedom and government transparency.
Mm-hmm.
I think the what led to my dismissal is encompassed in that those phrases. If you will.
Do you want to say just a little bit more about that?
Well, I think I know. I know you and I have talked about masks. Mm-hmm. I mean, let's just talk about that. I mean, the masks are, from what I've read, from what I think I've learned, and I think each person can make these decisions on their own. I'm not being critical of the individual that decides to wear a mask, so I hope it's not taken that way, but the masks are porous, and they do not stop the virus from exiting the mask, and so they're not protecting anybody.
Mm-hmm.
That's the issue, and they're harmful, in my view, harmful to the wearer. They're harmful to the social interchange that we engage in. I mean, I've noticed it just in everyday life. People, even to this day, aren't as open. You know, going to the gym, people don't talk like they used to. I think the masks have a lot to do with that. So I think it's been that's what I call government overreach. And the lockdowns, you know, we could go on and on about that, but so I would be someone at the legislature that would be resistant to accepting those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
Without some pushback. You know, I think that's we've had too much acceptance of this, what I call government overreach.
Mm-hmm. And certainly a need for more discussion.
Right.
That has been not really, no space has been made for that, which, you know,
no.
Speaking of censorship and omission of discussion and liberty.
That's near the top of the list of the problem,
mm-hmm.
of not having. That's why I so appreciate this opportunity and mm-hmm. this radio station for opening up. I mean, I was, you know. My jaw dropped. What, you want to talk about it? This is great. You
know? I know.
So, yeah.
I'm so happy to be here, too.
Yeah.
Yes, WMRW. Thank you. I was just filled with joy driving here today.
Yeah.
You know, the scenery, it's such a beautiful day.
Sure.
And here I get to come here and speak with you and and speak, you know, and allow
exactly.
you to speak. This is just so beautiful.
Yeah.
And speaking of free speech, you know, and liberty, Proposal 5, Article 2, if I could just read it
sure.
for folks here, just to orient us, because I think that's part of it is I don't know if people are even reading
right.
the legal. And then I'm really excited to have an attorney here to help us dissect this legalese. Proposal 5 reads, this is a constitutional amendment that Vermonters are being asked to vote on our election ballots right now. Yes or no, do you agree to this? That an individual's right to personal reproductive autonomy is central to the liberty and dignity to determine one's own life course and shall not be denied or infringed unless justified by a compelling state interest achieved by the least restrictive means.
Right. Yeah. I'm not sure anyone really knows what it means, all of that language. The people that proposed it have even said as much. We'll let the courts decide what this means, is what they said.
Yeah, so I learned something when I was talking with you on the phone. I learned quite a few things, but one of them that I definitely wrote down was that reproductive autonomy, that phrase, currently has no legal definition. And so I'm wondering, how does that come about? If we have no definition, we're being asked to approve of something we don't know what it means. So when will we find out what it means?
We'll find out after the first lawsuit and the court determines, narrows the issues and decides how it will apply and what it means. The Legislative Council, Bryn Hare, said when asked when this was being discussed, "I think you know, as I said before, the court will interpret the extent to which the right to personal reproductive autonomy, the extent to what that protects." So, I think the word abortion was intentionally left out so that this could apply beyond abortion. It doesn't mention gender. It doesn't mention woman. It doesn't mention age. It's just personal reproductive autonomy, whatever that means.
And so people will challenge that in court based on what they think it means, or they...
Well, how will this come up in court? I suppose that's kind of what your question
is.
So let's say a child is in custody of the state. There was some abuse at the house. Something happened, and the child is in state's custody, and there's an attorney appointed for the child. Let's suppose the child is going to a public school, and the school, for one reason or another, there's thoughts within the child that, let's say it's a biological female, and she says, I am a boy. I have concluded that I am a male, and I want to take the steps necessary to avoid, I'm transgender. She says, and she wants whatever it takes to control her reproductive autonomy and not be a childbearing person.
Oh, so reproductive autonomy, right, could be stretched. We don't know yet.
In this transgender, this fluid world that we live, it's you don't know where that will lead, and who's going to pay for that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one thing. Medical people that, for whatever reason, are reluctant to perform abortions, participate in that, could be concluded that this amendment, because the state licenses those people, so that's the state involvement, and one could challenge the notion that a doctor was refusing to provide this abortion, that should be part of the a benchmark for coming to the state and practicing medicine. So that's another potential. Someone files a lawsuit, gets into court if someone's not being permitted to change gender or put into the they wouldn't perform an abortion, and someone could challenge that in court. That's how it would get in there, because there's been a violation of the reproductive autonomy.
And what about, like, one of the questions I know that came up a lot with students was, my understanding of the law is that currently, we should probably talk about that too. What's the current standing of abortion currently?
Right.
But my understanding is that it's the woman's right, that the father, the man involved, has really no say. And so this, when I read this bill, that's one of the major questions. Could that also be a legal question?
You're right. I don't know if I said this, but it doesn't mention woman. So the man's reproductive autonomy is at issue too, obviously.
So these cases could come to court.
That's right. I mean, some have said that it could lead to the man saying after the fact, after the birth of a child, could say, well, I told you I wanted an abortion. To the woman, and why should I be forced to pay child support, and take it to court?
So
when forced to pay child support, he says, my right to personal reproductive autonomy was violated.
Yeah. So it goes to court, and then how do the courts? But I thought the courts have to go back to the Constitution. So isn't
they
it
would.
Sort of we're sort of
they
going
would
in
go
a circle
to the court would go back to the Constitution, and it would say, Mr. Schmedlap has personal reproductive autonomy. And the court would say our reading of this amendment gives him a right to object. And there wasn't an abortion. That was her choice, but he shouldn't have to pay child support. Is the possible argument,
yeah.
And whether the court will rule that way, it remains to be seen, which is what the proponents said. When these kinds of questions were proposed, when this was being proposed, when these questions were presented to the proposers, they said, my understanding is they did not engage in this back and forth and say this could happen. This could, they just said, we'll see what they say.
Right.
That's troubling.
Mm-hmm. Which gets me to another big thing I learned speaking with you on the phone before we met was, first of all, that just that this has even happened already. So sort of this constitutional amendment has already gone through the House and the Senate.
Yeah. Quickly, I can describe the process if you want.
Yeah, please.
Okay, so it takes two sessions of the legislature because, I mean, the framers, the founders said we will let one session, one elected group, which would be House and Senate, right? One elected group to propose an amendment to the Constitution. And then you've got to have another election. Mm-hmm. So that's every 2 years, of course, in Vermont, right? So then the next session, that's just to say, you know, you could throw the bums out if they propose something ridiculous. But the first group, it must have been 2019 when this happened, proposed this language.
Mm-hmm.
And it had to pass two-thirds of the Senate and then just a majority vote in the House. And it had to start in the Senate. It easily passed.
Really?
And then just this past session, it had to pass again.
Mm-hmm.
And it only had to be a majority in the Senate and a majority again in the House. And it passed again.
Mm.
So now it's on the ballot. And whether you personally heard a lot about this debate, I don't know. I suspect a lot of people didn't. I've talked to people that have their ballots and aren't aware that this is on the ballot. I think the proponents are engaged in an undercover operation, if you will. I really don't think this is being debated openly. Mm-hmm. I mean, in fact, I've read that there have been scheduled debates that have been canceled by the side that promotes this amendment at the last minute.
Uh-huh.
Over and over. That's been the strategy, to not talk about this.
Ann
Donahue is a representative of Northfield, and she's been willing to debate this, and she could do a lot better job than I could. You ought to invite her on.
Mm-hmm.
But and she's been shut down. I don't think she's had any debates. She's arguing against it, against this vote. I would say vote no too, and we can get into why even the person that calls themselves pro-choice or liked Roe v. Wade should really pause and look at this and do some research before voting. And I think many of those people may say, this is not, we don't want to tinker with the Constitution and the unknown that this provides. Because, as we haven't gotten into specifically yet, there is a statute now on the books, passed in 2019, that says the legislature shall not enact any restrictions on abortion at all.
Oh, so 2019, we put a law on the books, on the statute.
That's right, that's right.
So the legislature can't fiddle with specifically abortion rights.
That's right,
which
and it says and the word abortion is used in that statute.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So that's in law.
That's in law.
And so so a constitutional amendment is needed for...
Well, you know, I'm going to be, I hope, fair. I think the proponents are suggesting that, the legislature would have a lot of people like me and we would be imposing restrictions on abortion, you know, that's possible.
Mm-hmm.
But what would actually have to happen to eliminate that statute that says you can't restrict abortion? There'd have to be a legislature that voted to repeal that statute.
Mm-hmm.
I would think you'd have to eliminate it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'd have to have a governor to sign that bill and overcome any veto effort or whatever. It would have to go through the process to repeal it. Now, what would happen if that bill that prohibited restrictions on abortion passed? Do you know what would happen?
Mm-mm.
Well, there would still be no restrictions on abortion. I mean, we haven't had a law on the books about abortion, really, since 1972.
Mm-hmm.
There's been no restrictions. So if there's no law about abortion on the books, there's no restrictions.
Mm-hmm. And now we even have a statute since
that says there's no restrictions. But if that law went away, there'd be no mm-hmm. restrictions. There still would have to be affirmative action mm-hmm. by the legislature. So, I mean, I am not running for king.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think this amendment is, and we can get into more about the problems with it, but so I'll just stop talking and let you ask another question.
Yeah, well, I think it's a great I don't see why we would want to miss this opportunity to come and speak with each other about
this.
Especially since it is a topic. Now, see, I thought this was another thing that you helped clear up with me, was that this started back in 2019, this constitutional mm-hmm. amendment that we're voting on, or being asked to vote on right now on our ballots, mm-hmm. started years ago. So this was not in response to the Roe v. Wade deciding this was not a federal issue and tossing it back to the states. No. This had nothing to do with that.
No, I'm not sure when the idea germinated. I do know that in the fall of 2018, Justice Kavanaugh was confirmed. So I don't know if in reaction to Justice Kavanaugh's confirmation I frankly think the work on this amendment probably preceded that,
mm-hmm.
but I don't know for sure. Mm-hmm. The records are there when it started. There's no question Planned Parenthood and our Attorney General, you know, had working sessions and worked this out.
Mm-hmm.
The language, and the some of the proponents, I believe, including the Attorney General at the time, T.J. Donovan, wanted the word abortion put in the amendment, but the other proponents did not want that.
Mm-hmm.
So why is that? If this is about abortion, it's curious.
Yeah,
and I think it goes beyond abortion.
Well, and that's why I thought, who better than a lawyer mm-hmm. who's mm-hmm. running for House, right, to come and help us understand that. So,
and understand, too, that I am running. Someone might be listening and say, well, how are you going to affect this, mm-hmm. you know, at the legislature? I'm just telling you where I'm coming from. It's one of the reasons I'm running, because my reaction to it was, why are we amending the Constitution?
Yeah.
And so I want to, if you want the legislature to be have legislators who would vote for this without any pushback, then don't vote for me.
Mm-hmm.
I just think it's a mindset. Mm-hmm. You know, we're tinkering with the Constitution. I think most Vermonters, I think over 50%, would not like the idea. In fact, people I've talked to, knocking on doors, who say they would vote for this, many who don't know about it,
mm-hmm.
But they don't like the idea of late-term abortions.
Mm-hmm.
A moment before the birth, a right to abortion. And you know, some say, oh, there aren't a lot of late-term abortions, if any. Well, the Constitution, as any law is, but more so about the Constitution, is a statement of our values. Is this something we want in our Constitution? I mean, that's what the voters got to wrestle with. So the late-term abortions is one thing I think that disturbs a lot of people, and this would be enshrined in the Constitution.
Right, because I mean, you're thinking reproductive autonomy. That's what.
Well, yeah, I don't know how anyone could argue with a straight face that doesn't mean that a person has a right to an abortion up to the moment of birth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, reproductive. it's so vague. Even as a health teacher, I have to say, well, I would have a really hard time.
I mean, autonomy is maybe another word for freedom.
Yeah, but
reproductive freedom or liberty.
Independent.
In fact, the billboards you see out here on the side of the street talk about, they don't use the word autonomy because I think the people have the same struggle with it that you have. What does that mean in relation to this? So they use the word freedom, you know. Right. Reproductive freedom.
Because pregnancy in itself is not an autonomous act. I mean, you know, to bring some humor, I mean, just humor into this.
Well,
I mean, it just,
yeah.
It's not autonomous. It's a coming together.
Well,
it's,
there's another, you mean the sexual act. Oh, yeah. And also, I would add, there's another person involved.
Right. And that's, yes. And so the children who are left out of the
Well, the children in the womb.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Right.
That's right. So, I don't think the science is vague on that at all. That at conception, you've got a human life.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, on the way here, I told you I was thinking about, you know, health, harmony, happiness, and humor.
Mm-hmm.
That's the name of the
mm-hmm.
show.
I know I haven't given you much humor today.
Well,
but.
No. I think we're doing a good job of keeping, you know,
yeah,
for me,
yeah,
I said
yeah.
the word amusement, maybe more than humor, but amusement, mm-hmm. that here we are at this uh-huh. point in human civilization after thousands and thousands of years.
Right.
Of civilized behavior and learning and knowledge and you know, sexuality and how far supposedly we've come with all these issues and being able to discuss them through the AIDS crisis and everything else. And here we sit, right? And we've got this phrase, we don't know what it means. We don't know when life begins. We don't know if women are the only ones who can give birth. You know, we're being thrown these questions that
right.
Are just confusing everybody on the issue. And I know, you know, I keep coming back to, like, what's the next generation? Because, you know, what do they think of all this, and how are they, what are they going to make of all of this? What impressions are we planting right now in their minds?
Exactly.
As we have this discussion.
Exactly. Someone told me an anecdote about the Equal Rights Amendment back in the 70s, and no matter where anyone stands on that at this point, the point that I'm making is that, you know, it looked like that was going to pass. I don't know if you remember or know what I'm talking about.
No.
The Equal Rights Amendment was
for women.
Proposed,
mm-hmm.
yep, to put it in the U.S. Constitution. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the U.S. Constitution, if there's a proposed amendment, each state had to ratify. And Vermont voted no, to the surprise of many.
Wow.
And that was back in the late 70s or early 80s. So
women, I was aware women don't even have equal rights right now.
Well, my point is, I was only making a kind of an academic point about the fact that you never know what's going to happen on Election Day.
Right.
So
that's true, too.
I think, you know, this, if Vermonters take a look at this, it won't pass.
Mm-hmm.
This amendment.
Right. I mean, And the Equal Rights Amendment is an interesting thing to bring up, that
right.
we don't even have an amendment yet that women are equal, and yet we're, you know, as a feminist, you know, and a woman, you know, I'm really glad to have the chance to talk more about this. And,
right.
and I am not encouraging, I mean, listeners out there, please definitely make your own decisions. Do your own research, fact check everything you hear, anywhere you hear it from. But I do want to stress the importance of talking about this, of making this something
right.
we can discuss, because a constitutional amendment is so serious.
Mm-hmm.
And just seeing how masks have been handled and the constitutionality of masks, I know we've lost a couple of cases, or it looks like we're losing the current one with the schools and masking and using the Constitution to protect people's rights to breathe. And so then there's also a part of me that when I think about constitutional amendments, and, you know, we don't even have an Equal Rights Amendment, you know, really, what good is the Constitution?
Mm-hmm.
Really, if we just go into courts and judges can just arbitrarily, you know, I've seen this in domestic violence and sexual violence cases,
mm-hmm.
Totally unfairly interpret, you know, the laws and the Constitution.
Yeah.
What are your feelings on just the state of law and in
well,
our country?
Well,
right,
it's unpredictable.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem. It's so the amendment is too extreme, I would say, because it's not limited. I mean, people say, well, we need to have an amendment in our Constitution that is would be consistent with Roe versus Wade, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Roe talked about, kind of arbitrarily, the trimesters and that the states could, that the state couldn't act in the first trimester without a compelling state interest. There was some phrase in there. I don't have Roe in front of me, but you know. And then the second trimester, there was more opportunity for the state to regulate. And then in the third trimester, there was even more opportunity for the state to regulate abortion. Mm. But the first trimester was very limited, and the Dodds decision merely said that the Constitution, really, the U.S. Constitution, doesn't say anything about abortion. That's just incorrect. It was an incorrect decision. But the point I'm making is that this goes way beyond Roe v. Wade, because it doesn't say anything about any regulation being possible throughout the 9 months. Being possible in the sense, I mean, there is, but for a compelling state interest, and that's a strict scrutiny standard, which is another way of saying it's very, very, very difficult to overcome that and impose any restrictions on abortion. Parental notice wouldn't be permitted. I don't know how you could have a restriction on late-term abortion. We've already mentioned that, but that's the big thing. And then where does it go in this developing, frankly, transgender agenda, which is related to the reproductive autonomy?
Right, but is it? I mean, if it's right, it's very confusing. And it just seems to be making things more vague, because if everything, I mean, the way I understand the law, you know, most civil laws that we have, is things are legal until they're illegal.
And right. And so, that's true with abortion.
Law. Yeah. So
that's right.
So Roe versus Wade, you were saying, was just allowing states to make laws to restrict at certain terms, certain amounts.
Roe said there was a right to an abortion in the U.S. Constitution. And the states couldn't impose certain restrictions. And then they heard a series of cases, many cases, interpreting laws that states enacted to restrict abortion. But here in Vermont, we never. There were proposals to impose restrictions consistent with Roe. They never passed the legislature from 1973 on.
So we have nothing. There's
no parental notice. There's no, I think there was a waiting period that was proposed. Records, maybe. I mean, there was all sorts of things that were proposed by the Right to Life folks, and they never succeeded in Vermont. So, I mean, I'm not aware of any restrictions on abortions at all without that statute we talked about and without this. So that's another way of saying this amendment is unnecessary. And it also removes it from the political process. Talk about not talking about it anymore. Once you put it in the Constitution, it really will limit the ability, except spur some lawsuits to say someone's reproductive autonomy has been violated.
Right, which are expensive. So you have certain people are, you know, courts can only be really accessed by certain people who have legal representation willing to bring it. It really does limit. All I'm saying is it does. You're right. It does limit the public's participation.
Right, right. Well, it just makes we don't know where the courts are going to go with it. So it's the uncertainty.
And in a way, it's grants. So it's granting an extra right, this compelling state interest. That was interesting to me that you said that you'd read that in Roe. Is that a phrase? So that is a phrase they used in this context?
I believe the strict scrutiny compelling state interest would be regarding the first trimester, but I'd have to look at Roe.
Okay.
But the point is the state really has to have a very good reason, and demonstrate it. And the courts are reluctant in the strict scrutiny area to approve any restriction, and that's what happened with the cases. Restrictions on abortion were had a tough row to hoe, so to speak. No pun intended there.
Right.
Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah.
We got some.
Yeah, there you go.
And so I'm wondering, you know, compelling state interest. One thing I've heard people ask is, well, we have a shortage of workers in our state. We need more young people. What if a compelling state interest, you know, what if reproductive rights, I mean, not, I'm sorry, fertility rates are decreasing. We know this. What if we come to a time and place where we need more babies and the state says, you know, I mean, this, you know, I'm just wondering how far, in a way, this is sort of giving the state some rights that they don't currently have. And they're sort of vague what those really
mean. I mean, I don't know about that. I think it's an individual's right. It's not the state's. So each person, although it doesn't say women,
right?
Every man and every woman, every person.
Mm-hmm.
It says, I think the word individual is used. You've got the language there, mm-hmm. but it says an individual.
An individual's right.
Yeah, so that's...
So what's an individual? That's even more than
that's
a...
That's right. It's not, doesn't say person.
Is that a
individual.
Baby? Individual? A fetus?
Well,
an embryo, this,
does the fetus, which I think just means little one.
Oh.
It's just a matter of, you know, the stage of development.
Mm-hmm.
Does the child have any rights? I think the Vermont courts have said no.
Mm-hmm.
There's no recognition that we have a child yet until birth.
Until birth.
According to the mm-hmm. courts. I don't think that's what God says.
Mm-hmm.
But, in fact, I know that's not what God says. But, he knew us when we were knitted in the womb. So I don't think there's much debate about that. I think that's part of the problem, where we've gone away from our faith. A lack of faith is driving this kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I think we've got a week, two and a half weeks left before mm-hmm. the election, and I hope people that haven't voted will take a careful look.
Right, and that brings up another question: is the way the elections are being done right now. A lot of people have already voted, is what I've discovered.
Right.
So it sort of eliminates these last few weeks of campaigning and things.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a problem, too. I don't know why the legislature did that. I don't think our election system was broken. There may have been some justification with the pandemic issues and, you know, some voting by from home, although I don't know why that couldn't have been handled by absentee ballot,
mm-hmm.
just like it was traditionally. And Vermont has a very easy absentee ballot system. It's just for the asking. I don't know that you have to have a specific reason. You may have to state a reason, but it doesn't have to be, you know, that you're sick or that you're away.
Uh-huh.
I think you just, you know, it's inconvenient. I mean, I don't know for sure, but that's kind of gone by the wayside for general elections. Everyone gets a ballot.
Mm-hmm.
And you've highlighted one of the issues, I think, is it's 40 days out from the election that you get your ballot. So people could vote before even the issues have been fleshed out.
Right.
Or the candidates.
The primaries just ended, really. I mean, you know, in August.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. It's not much after August that the ballots come out. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
that's true. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
They've had them a couple of weeks now. People have had them. I mean, I got mine in the mail. And, So, and then we've got these drop boxes. I don't know if you know about that. You could drop off up to 25 ballots into a drop box.
Oh, wow. Where are the drop boxes?
I think there's one in Barrie, or maybe two, but it's near the clerk's office.
Okay, so not every town.
The towns have an option.
Ah, okay.
It's in the statute; mm-hmm. They can have a drop box.
Interesting times.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
Oh.
Yep. Yep. Mailed out ballots and drop boxes. Mm-hmm. Put that together. What that could mean. I mean, Jimmy Carter and Mr. Baker had a commission quite some time ago. Jimmy Carter, President Carter. Mm-hmm. And they said, you know, absentee ballots, which I have no problem with absentee ballots. Mm-hmm. It's the mailing them to everybody because you're going to have problems with the lists. It's inevitable. People move. People die. Who hasn't got an anecdote about, if not themselves, someone in their life got more ballots than they would be entitled to mm-hmm. at their household? I think everybody's talked to somebody that's happened to. I talked to a postman who said he had 600 households, 600 dwellings that he delivers mail to, and in 2020 he had 70 ballots that were either the person had died or the person had moved.
Oh, like undeliverable.
And he took the action steps to make the correction. I don't know exactly what he did, but that's disturbing.
Right. No matter how you look at it, because wherever they ended up, they didn't get a ballot where they need. Well, we're assuming. Maybe. I don't know if they did, but there's a problem here. Right.
Out of state.
Right.
There's all sorts of ways they
could
move.
There's all sorts of things.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. Well, interesting.
So I say election, end election season mm-hmm. and have election day. Novel mm-hmm. thought. Mm-hmm. And I would go so far. I would say an ID. Mm-hmm. What's the problem with an ID? I have to have ID to buy beer or cigarettes. Voting mm-hmm. Should require an ID too.
Yeah.
So, again, I'm not saying Tom Kelly goes to the legislature and these things will come up. Mm-hmm. I'm just describing some of the things that spurred me to run. I look at these enactments and I go, what is going on?
Yeah.
And we need somebody who thinks a little differently going to Montpelier.
Mm-hmm. And so, City of Barrie, what's going on in Barrie? And as you're talking with people, you know, how are they feeling?
Well, I've been gratified by everyone is friendly. People are really, whether they agree with me or not. So it's actually been a joy to talk to folks. And I frankly, I'm kind of a, you know, shy. I it's not something that I would, you know, ordinarily think that I would like to do, but I actually look forward to it. I mm-hmm. tried to get out there every day. And a lot of people aren't home. Some are working from home, mm-hmm. and I have to be quick with them because they have to get back mm-hmm. to it.
Yeah.
But, you know, people will talk, and I appreciate that.
Yeah.
And it's good to hear from folks. People are concerned about the economy and the cost of living and inflation. Many people are concerned about this election integrity. I find that to be... common.
Mm-hmm.
And you know why we need tabulators in Vermont? Why do we need voting machines? I don't know. Oh. We've got a population, what is it, the size of Boston mm-hmm. in our whole state?
Yeah.
France just conducted an election, national mm-hmm. election, paper ballots.
Nice.
And they counted them.
Wow.
So
yeah, it took us an hour in Cabot to count ours.
You don't have the tabulators.
Well, we did just get them a few years ago, but before that,
oh,
I
okay.
helped with the vote.
Right,
you know, the counting.
Right.
It only took an hour.
Yeah.
I mean, it was no big deal, and that was a big ballot.
Yeah.
A lot of
so
detail.
Why do we have tabulators? That's the question. I just throw it. I'm not asking you to answer the question.
Right.
I just it's a rhetorical. Yeah. You know, what is
and
the
people
reason?
Are wondering, but you wouldn't hear that in the news or in the media, or it's another one of those.
No. I had somebody tell me, an ex-politician. He says, "Well, you know, it's nice to get that quick result." I said, "I want a quick result." Maybe when I order a hamburger.
Right.
But the vote,
right.
I want people to be satisfied. I mean, the mantra from the government, frankly, and here, I'm a guy who was prosecuting people for violating rules.
Yeah.
And I've become distrustful of the government, okay?
Uh-huh.
And when the government says this is the safest and the securest election and repeats that to the top of the mountain, and anybody that says anything different is censored, I got a problem with that.
Yeah.
Why are people being censored for questioning masks or you know, the transgender ideology
mm-hmm.
or election integrity. Mm-hmm. Why can't we talk about these things? That's why I so much appreciate being here at WMRW today.
I know.
It's great.
And this is what it's about, community radio, is letting people share the airwaves.
Yeah.
So thank you, listeners, for listening in. We do have just under 10 minutes. Where would you like to take this conversation, Tom? Is there something we haven't gone deeply enough into?
I don't know. Let's see. Climate change.
Oh, sure. Why not?
Okay. I think... I mean, I have thoughts on the larger issue, but it's been pretty clear, I think, that the people who are proposing these this legislation in Vermont are acknowledging that Vermont will not have an impact on the larger climate. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a cost-benefit analysis. Why are we... engaging in this effort when this is really, I mean, the climate goes way beyond the borders of Vermont. Mm-hmm. Let's put it that way. So, you know, I mean, I think the science is unsettled. In fact, there's a book entitled Unsettled by a man named Koonin, K-O-O-N-I-N, which I have and have listened to. And I recommend that to folks. He was in the Obama administration. I have a copy with me. I'll show it to you.
Yeah.
Even if you agree with it, Vermont's not going to lick that on its own. Even if you agree that, that something has to be done, Vermont's not going to solve that problem on its own.
Right. Well, and the rules and regulations are so unfairly written and so unfairly enforced, in my experience, mm-hmm. that it's the polluters who end up getting protected, and
okay.
the common people and the environment that get
yep.
the shaft.
Yep.
So I'm weary of laws, you know, because they're not fairly, you know, followed or applied.
Right. Yep.
Personally.
Yep. Yep. It's a thorny issue, and you know, again, it's been a not much of a debate about it. You know, there's this council. It's appointed people. They're not elected. And they're, you know, there was something that came back to the legislature this past session that was vetoed by the governor.
Mm-hmm.
And it survived the veto. In other words, it didn't pass, but it was by one vote.
Mm. Yeah.
99 voted to override Governor Scott's veto of this bill that some said would result in $10 a gallon for heating oil and all these mm-hmm. conversions that would take place in the way you heat your homes. And for what? If it's acknowledged this is not going to have an impact on the air quality or the water,
mm-hmm.
why are we going alone on this? Now, some say, just to be fair, that, you know, Vermont needs to lead the way on this. As some have said that about the abortion amendment, too.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm a vote for not saying that's a reason
mm-hmm.
to go to $10 a gallon so Vermont can lead the way and set an example. I mean, the other thing that comes to mind on that is this emission control. The gas mileage. Fuel. We now are tied to the California. New vehicles sold in California by 2035 will have to can no longer be fueled by fossil fuels, gasoline, and Vermont has tied itself to that. So we will have no longer in new vehicles, if we continue along that course, by 2035, you'll no longer be able to buy a vehicle in Vermont with this powered by gas.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a wise approach with the interrelated economies? I mean, you know, you could go to New Hampshire and buy a car. It would be perfectly legal. So you're just shutting down the business in Vermont, for one thing. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so I mean, I frankly, openly here will say, I would, if that came to the legislature, I would vote to eliminate that tying to California. Mm-hmm. Like the other states, most of them have decided to do, which is not go with that 2035 mm-hmm. Decision. I don't know if I'm being clear, but...
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, so I've heard a lot of questions about these electric cars and their use in Vermont.
Right.
And it's just something we definitely need more conversation about.
Right. The grid, can it support them? I mean, mm-hmm. you've heard about these blackouts and restrictions on charging your car at night in other states.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you'd think if you're using the car in the daytime, that would be when you would charge it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
and but, you know, so do we have the grid to support the recharging? And, you know, there's the batteries, and how do you get rid of them? There's all sorts of questions there.
Right.
That's right.
Right, and maintenance of our back roads, I know, is it kind of ties into that. It's just this whole infrastructure that allows us to live in rural areas.
Right.
Do we want to keep that infrastructure working or not?
Right.
And what
right.
does it mean if it's not?
Yep.
Where do we go?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we are coming to the top of the hour. We do have a little bit more time. Do you want to hang out for another 15 minutes?
Sure, whatever. Yeah,
okay.
Sure. That's great.
Great.
Yeah.
I want to make sure that within the time that I am supposed to, let's see here. Let's get the times pulled up here. Oh, perfect. I've got a couple more minutes before I do the mm-hmm. the top of the hour.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Law enforcement is another topic.
Oh.
Public safety.
Mm-hmm.
I think a topic that will inevitably come up in this session is something called immunity for police officers, that they would have to, they would be, right now, there's a way to dismiss a lawsuit if it's essentially frivolous. Legislators enjoy that. Privilege of doing that. They have immunity.
Oh, so legislators
have
it.
Prosecutors have it. Other government officials have this immunity
from
frivolous lawsuits. That's right. You can
right there.
If a police officer violates your constitutional rights, of an obvious constitutional right, there would be an opportunity to sue. Police officers are sued all the time, and successfully.
Ah.
But there's something called qualified immunity, and it would, I mean, I support law enforcement, and, you know, good. Most of police are good people, and they do the right thing. When they don't, there's layers of opportunity to make sure that doesn't happen. I mean, the courts can act, the prosecutors can act. I mean, I acted to say I'm not going to accept any cases from that officer because of this issue.
Oh.
And that's something that can be done. I did that with an officer from Waterbury.
That would be part of the check and balance.
That's part of the check and balance. But there's also the lawsuit opportunity, but not... ones that would be termed, you know, frivolous.
Mm-hmm.
And the courts would be the ones to make that decision. Anyone can file a lawsuit, even with this qualified immunity.
Mm-hmm.
The court then would makes decisions right now whether that immunity applies. But the legislature is mulling over the possibility, and I think they kicked it down the road to after this election, because there was so much pushback from the law enforcement community and, I think, citizens,
mm-hmm.
who said, we're having trouble recruiting officers now.
Right.
Some sheriffs, I think, maybe it was a municipal department, said, people will resign if this qualified immunity goes away, because we're going to be distracted by these expensive lawsuits that, you know, point to a problem,
mm-hmm.
you know, that mm-hmm. needs to be fixed.
Right.
And then let's address it. But I mean, no, I haven't heard any anecdotes about dismissed, justified lawsuits.
Ah, yeah.
You know, give me the list, or give me one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we can talk about that.
Yeah.
But I haven't heard any.
Great.
So,
Well, let's just pause for a moment to remind our listeners. Thank you so much, folks, who are out there listening. My name is Amy. I'm co-hosting here the 4-H show, and I have Tom Kelly, who is running for House of Representatives for Berry City, in the studio live right now with me. And you are listening to WMRW, Serving the Mad River Valley. This is a community radio station. WMRWLP, Warren, Vermont, at 94.5 FM on your dial or streaming at WMRW.org. You can also listen on demand if you scroll down on WMRW.org, scroll down to the Spinatron link, and there you can find archived shows going back 2 weeks. So you can go back and listen to this show or any others that you hear on WMRW that way. And thank you, Tom, so much for coming in today. This is so cool.
Yeah, I'm really glad you invited me. I appreciate the opportunity. Thanks.
Yeah, I think we need to hear from more of our folks who are stepping up out there. There are so many amazing people from all across the spectrum and across the state who are taking on personal responsibility for the running of our state and the organizing of the people and the communication and everything. So,
well, that reminds me of a book here I wanted to mention by Eric Metaxas. He spells it M-E-T-A-X-A-X, and it's a book that kind of inspires me. It's about... the title is If You Can Keep It. And Ben Franklin was exiting the Constitutional Convention when a woman approached him. Framers had signed the Constitution. Of course, then it had to be ratified by the states. As he was exiting, the story goes, he was asked by a woman, what do we have? A monarchy or a republic? And he said, madam, a republic, if you can keep it. And that's what this book is about Franklin, but then what was kind of meant by that, what was understood in the culture then about the people of the country and what that would mean, what it would take to produce the republic that we've had for 200 years, which was not perfect then. Mm-hmm. It's not perfect now.
Right.
But the, I the first thing on my list is embraces principles outlined in the Declaration of Independence, the United States, and Vermont constitutions. Mm-hmm. So that's what this book is about. And frankly, it's about virtue and faith. And that's the kind of grounding that people kind of need to make this country work. So I highly recommend that book to folks that might be listening. I forgot what next I was going to address, but anyway, that's... go ahead.
Yeah, you did tap on something there with the, I feel like, you know, with this election and how strangely our elections have been run the last few years and just how intense everybody's emotions have been and the intensity of the division and the propaganda that we're all living under. You know, we have really lost sight of what this is all about. I mean, you know, this proposal is just so vague and weird.
Oh. Thank you, because I'm getting old, so I have trouble keeping my train of thought. No, but you talk about the Declaration of Independence, which is kind of, you know, where we started, if you will, although Vermont wasn't one of the 13 colonies. But anyway, Jefferson wrote that the government is that he began with, we are... conferred with inalienable rights from God, and those include life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and that government is instituted by the people. We give over some of our authority, if you will, to run our own lives to government to protect, he used the word secure, those rights that are given to us. You know, we want the government to help us secure those rights, protect those rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And I've got an article here. I could give you the link to it. But it talks about kind of the sources for the notion that the life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that order is not arbitrary. It is intentional.
Oh.
And and when those, when there's a conflict, and I'd say there is a conflict, autonomy, freedom, liberty, is a right. I mean, I acknowledge that, of course.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's what Article 22 talks about. But there's a right that precedes it in that list to life. And so when there's a conflict, the higher right controls.
Ah, so like liberty comes before happiness, right?
Liberty comes before happiness. Well, happiness is not the way we...
No.
No, I think what they meant was that encompassed, for example, I believe from what I've read, property rights. You know, your right to enjoy, you know, your property, to live, you know, heat your home, and you know, protect yourself, and, you know, property rights.
Yeah.
And, you know, and so the police help you with that, you know, protecting your property rights. You know, this... Don't take this the wrong way, but there was a conflict, you know, and it's unfortunate, and it's a part of our history that we have to acknowledge and not respect, although it was a worldwide issue, slavery.
Mm-hmm.
So that was there then, and really what it came down to, and this article deals with it, is, believe it or not, I mean, it was considered property rights, you know, the slave, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that where was the conflict? The human being's liberty
came first
before the property rights.
Yeah.
So just like the life comes before the autonomy or liberty.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I mean, this is a question I had written down. I wasn't sure if we'd have time for it, but something that came up a lot with me and children in classrooms, and I worked also with kids who had witnessed domestic violence and were caught in custody battles a lot of the time, and things that were really... painful. And kids would often wonder, you know, what were their rights? And I just saw children being trampled again and again in the courts. I mean, even though they're appointed a guardian ad litem, even though, you know, we try to put these checks and balances in, kids really didn't seem to have a voice. They didn't feel like they had any voice. Are they considered property? I mean, I'd heard this legal, you know, analogy used, well, they're sort of considered property until they're, I don't know if that was accurate or how that works.
I wouldn't put it that way.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I spent some time in juvenile court. Certainly that never was addressed that way.
Okay.
I mean, until you reach adulthood, certainly parents have authority.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. And I think they should.
Oh, authority. So that's a little... That's
Yeah, the decisions can be made by the parents.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, I don't think anybody talks about it as property rights, but, yeah, I mean, that's an interesting... I mean, I can't say that's totally foreign to me that hasn't been mentioned, you know.
Yeah, no one confirmed that.
Maybe it's akin to that, but, yeah.
Yeah, it was more like an analogy.
Yeah,
Not a legal
I mean,
term.
Certainly... Parents have a say in the raising of their children and protecting them, and they have responsibility too, which goes with the rights.
Right.
But yeah, and the state intervenes, you know, every day that happens.
Right. And so, trying to get to a place where we're as a country, as a civilization, coming together as human units, you know, if. The way I see it is it seems like we're sort of coming maybe to the end of all these bureaucracies, of needing all of these external authorities, and coming together as people to work this out so that it is just about, you know, getting back to the original intention of
the Constitution.
You're
right. I hope
getting
you're
right. Getting back to the...
Yeah.
We've
I
sort of
know.
Gotten buried in all these details
yeah,
that, if
anything,
are keeping
us... Yeah, I don't know what the future holds.
Us.
Yeah, right, exactly. I mean, that's a good point. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, if you... You have heard of the book by, just a second, Naomi Wolf, called The Body of Others, and that talks about what's happened in the last 2 years. I think that's another book that may be helpful to kind of talk about that issue.
Right. Because I've been mostly really saddened by the ending of town meetings the last few years.
Yeah.
That was really I felt like that was the one place we could come together as neighbors, look each other in the eye, agree to disagree, you know, and really just see each other as humans around all these issues. I was at Constitutional Day up at the State House a couple weeks ago, and it's just a day that nationally we've decided to hold a day where we celebrate the Constitution. So there were people there with American flags at the State House. They were reading the Constitution, and this woman stomped up. I guess she'd been going to the farmer's market and walking by, and she stomps right up. I mean, I could literally feel the ground shake underneath her. And she comes up to a friend and I, and she said, "What's going on here, a Trump rally?" And we looked at her, we said, "Well, no, it's the Constitution." I tried to explain, it's like a national holiday, you know, approved by, you know, the legislature. And she said, "Well, it looks like a Trump rally to me." And she just stomped off. And I think that's what I mean by the urgency of these negative emotions that are just closing our hearts.
I mean, President Trump will come and go, but the Constitution's going to be there.
Right.
And let's hope. I mean, that's what I say. And it's survived so far, and it provides us a benchmark, something to look at, you know, that is not changing, and that's good. So I also attended that event, and I think it was the day that the lady came up to Franklin. I mean, that was the day. At the end of the convention, and that was the signing day. I believe that's what the Constitution Day is commemorating, the signing of the Constitution, if I'm not mistaken. Not after the ratification, but the signing after the convention.
And like Benjamin Franklin said,
if you can keep it.
It's a republic if you can keep
it. If you can keep it.
And here we are. I was thinking on the way here how this opportunity Vermonters have right now to vote on this amendment really makes us a republic again, in a way, because there are very few things that we all get to vote on. You know, otherwise we elect people like you, you know, to represent us. It's more by proxy, where this really is a republic decision we are making here. But without, you know, the hashing out that Benjamin Franklin and his cohorts there had to go through to come up with this document, to really hash out the nitty-gritties and argue and debate. You know, we need more of that, I'm feeling like.
Yeah, there was that opportunity in the halls of the legislature. Mm-hmm. But most people didn't know about it. And it doesn't mean they, you know, and some of it was during the lockdowns, and it was either online or not. And you know, people couldn't attend, or there were small numbers. Yeah, so exactly. It should be difficult to amend the Constitution, but we'll see what the people think on November 8th.
Right. Well, when things become unbearable, what does it say in the Declaration of Independence? You know.
We
can put up with so much. I feel like if we come together as people, we can peacefully listen to each other. That's what I love about WMRW and community radio and neighbors like you, Tom.
Thank you. I agree with you about Town Meeting Day. That would be phenomenal if we could go back. That went away in Barrie in the mid-60s. There was, you know, four wards, I think, at the time. There's three now, but there were four wards, and it was at community schools. Mm-hmm. People would gather and decide things. I guess I was just a kid. I don't know if that was only on, you know, Town Meeting Day, probably, in March. I imagine there was an Australian ballot in the general election. I don't know if you know, but, I mean, there was paper ballots, right, for other things,
right?
Of course.
But more and more towns are going to us. I know Cabot just recently went to Australian ballot.
Right, but we're talking about town meeting.
Yeah.
When you talk about elections for officials, for state officials, or national officials, that would be paper ballot in the fall. Of course,
Right.
But still, the town meeting day, it's sad to have lost that, that approach, the discussion.
Right.
And the apple pie.
Yes. I know, and the food.
Yeah.
I know. I think that was a great part of
it.
Although it's funny that when it almost seemed like there was a PR campaign against town meetings back in 2021, was it, during the lockdown? You know, there was this, and picking on the food was a big theme I saw in a lot of cartoons and things where people were sort of, you know, sort of like, oh, who needs that Jell-O anyway? And it was like, really? I don't know. I felt like there was something really lost that people, you know, weren't appreciating. And that's why I love having people come into the radio station.
Yeah. I'm a big fan. I think we should go back to that. That would be great.
Yeah.
To go back to the town meeting.
And one day actually seemed too short. You know, we would actually feel very rushed, you know, to get through it, and people were hungry, and we've only got one day. I mean, there's so much more to talk about if we really take our republic seriously.
There you go.
Yeah. But it can be fun, too.
This was. I would think so. Yeah. You know, I never experienced it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, town meeting, right, because you're in Barry.
That's
so
right.
You guys,
Yeah.
Come out to a rural town this spring, just experience.
Yeah. If they let you, can you just observe?
Oh, yep. Okay. I used to represent a nonprofit that I was volunteering with. So I would go to Cabot before I even lived there.
Oh, okay.
And just sit in case they had any questions about our appropriation that we were asking for.
And did they let you eat?
Yes, they let me eat, but not vote.
Okay.
But I was certainly welcome to eat.
Yeah. And was it a show of hands, or how did that work?
Well, they say ayes and nays, you know, and
close,
then if it's close, they'll do a paper. Or you can ask for a paper ballot without doing a floor vote.
Okay.
You've got
Robert's rules.
Yes,
whatever.
You've got to have a skilled facilitator for sure.
Yeah. Usually the same person, probably year to year.
Oh, well, cool. Thank you, Tom, for coming out to Warren.
I'm, like I said, very happy to do it. I appreciate it.
Yeah, me too. This has been my honor having Tom Kelly running for House of Representatives for the city of Barrie. And I'm sorry I did not take phone calls today because I'm still learning how to run the phones. But if somebody wants to give us a call, I don't even know the number here. I would do a test one as we get off the air. But anyway, I will work on that for next time because that would have been a lot of fun. I want to hear from listeners, too. So thank you for joining me. We have open airwaves here at WMRW. And remember, the preceding program represents the views and of its participants and producers. It does not necessarily represent the views of WMRW or its license holder, Rootswork. Thank you for joining me. Have a great fall day.